Okay, I want you to look down at your feet. And if you're wearing shoes, what do they say about you? About your gender, about your status, maybe about your very excellent taste. Shoes are important for protection, but they can also tell a story about desire and power. And that's particularly true in fairy tales. Just think of Cinderella's glass slippers or those red shoes that never come off. Rebecca Ann De Rosario is from Monash University, and she has a fascination with footwear in fairy tales. Rebecca Ann, welcome.
Thank you. Well, thank you for having me.
Now, if I'm reading a fairy tale and I come across a pair of shoes, how much attention should I pay to that pair of shoes?
A great deal of attention, because shoes usually in fairy tale indicate something magical is about to happen.
And what kind of meanings can these shoes have broadly?
They can actually have all kinds of meanings, but one of the biggest meanings that they're related to is the idea of power. Shoes are all about power. If you've got shoes, you've got mobility. You can move in society. You can do things.
And I guess, you know, at the time that these stories were written, some people probably didn't have shoes.
That's true. I mean, if you look at Hans Christian Andersen's The Red Shoes, that's sort of the dilemma that begins the whole tale, is that she doesn't have a good pair of shoes to wear.
All right, well, let's hear a little bit of The Red Shoes. That's the ballet music from the 1948 film The Red Shoes, a film that I've got to say really haunted me as a kid. But of course, it's based on this classic tale by Hans Christian Andersen from 1845. Rebecca Ann, this is a story about a girl who dares to wear the shoes of an aristocrat. What happens in the story?
Basically, there's actually quite a few shoes in this story, and most of them are red. And she starts off where she doesn't have shoes, and she only has wooden shoes to wear when it's cold. And then a poor shoemaker's widow makes her a cheap pair of red shoes, which she thinks are wonderful. And she's adopted. And then she gets a pair of decent red shoes. And she loves these red shoes. And of course, Hans Christian Andersen punishes her for that love, effectively. And she can't take them off. And she keeps dancing in them. And she eventually has to go to the executioner and have him chop off her feet. And that's the only way she can get away from these red shoes.
But even then, I think she still can't, right? Like these, I mean, this is horrible, but these kind of cut-off shoes are still in these feet and they're still dancing and causing problems for her.
They still dance off into the woods and she still has to make good, in a sense. It's a very religious tale as well, because, of course, one of the no-nos that she actually commits is that she wears the red shoes to church. So she has to do a lot of repenting before she can actually get away from the shadow of these red shoes, which is kind of ironic, because usually when I talk to people about the red shoes, they go, oh, the red shoes, the beautiful red shoes. So everyone still loves them.
People would still wear them. So
yeah.
So when we look at the story of the red shoes, what meaning do we see in the shoes? What do those shoes embody?
They basically embody that idea of mischief almost. They're not quite Christian, in a sense, in the Hans Christian Andersen version. And so that desire for them becomes a sign of vanity, of greed even. And so they're seen as being a sort of temptress in the tale itself. And that's how they bring down the heroine, Karen, is because her love for these shoes is too strong. Her desire is too much, and therefore she has to be punished.
This story kind of annoys me. I think
it annoys me too.
Yeah?
Yes.
I mean, it seems like she's getting a ridiculous amount of punishment for wanting to wear something nice.
Well, that's the thing, but at the same time, understanding it within that context of the times, there were certain coloured shoes that you could wear at certain occasions, particularly religious festivals. There were certain coloured shoes that you had to wear, like white shoes rather than red shoes. Also, too, the idea that she actually at one point has the shoes that were designed for an earl's daughter. And so they're out of her social range, her class range. And so she actually does she actually shouldn't be wearing those shoes, essentially. And she gets away with it for a short time. So there's a whole lot of class, religion, everything is involved in this tale in how she actually relates to these shoes.
Oh, I'm frustrated. This is the Hub on Books, and I'm speaking to Rebecca and De Rosario about shoes in fairy tales. And there probably can't be a pair of shoes more famous than Cinderella's glass slippers.
Oh, it's a beautiful dress. Did you ever see such a beautiful dress? And look, glass slippers. Why, it's like a dream, a wonderful dream come true.
Yes, now, Rebecca Ann, the story of Cinderella is absolutely synonymous with shoes. And I believe this story dates all the way back to the 17th century?
17th century, even earlier. I mean, one of the problems with fairy tales is that they're very difficult to trace back to their original origins. And there are many different variations that seem to infuse the Cinderella story. But the first Cinderella that we have in print in Europe in particular is in the mid-17th century. And in that, she's actually not wearing glass slippers. She's actually wearing essentially platform shoes.
Nice.
Very nice. She can't walk in them.
Oh, really?
No, when you actually see her fleeing from the prince, she's in a carriage, and that's where she loses her shoes because they were so high they would be difficult to walk in.
And we have, I mean, I have heard this before, that Cinderella's shoes changed over the years. But when did they become glass slippers?
That was Charles Perrault. Just at the end of the 17th century, when he writes his version of Cinderella, she has glass slippers. The glass slippers actually come from a period in time too when the court was kind of obsessed with glass, with magical kind of glass creation. So the shoes fit right into that period.
Would it have been considered a bit risque or exciting to imagine a character in these exotic shoes?
I think it would have been quite magical. The idea that you could use glass to create such a delicate object that somebody could actually wear. And you find that throughout time after Charles Perrault's version comes out, people keep trying to explain how she would have worn these glass slippers, because when you think about it, they're not that practical. But they would have been mules, so they would have been backless, which would have been a bit easier to wear.
In this story, it's interesting because it's actually, in a way, the male character, the prince, who really obsesses over the shoe. Can we look at this shoe as almost an erotic thing, a thing to lust after?
Oh, certainly. In fact, my favourite version of Cinderella exists around the same time, and it's by Mary Catherine D'Aulnoy. Her story, Finette Cendron, features a Cinderella who actually wears red velvet shoes that are embroidered with pearls. She loses it in the wood, and the prince finds this shoe. He doesn't really know Cinderella at all, but he falls in love with the shoe and he puts it under his pillow. He caresses it. He starts to pine away with love for this shoe. And eventually they have to find the woman who wears it, because that's the only woman he'll marry.
But I note that unlike the poor girl who obsesses over shoes in the red shoes, he's not punished for his love of shoes.
No, he isn't, although he is a slightly ridiculous figure in the tale.
On the Hub on Books, you're hearing about footwear and fairy tales with Rebecca Ann De Rosario from Monash University. Now here's another example of some magical shoes.
Now, ye augur, pray for mercy from Puss.
It would.
Ooh, I'll kill that cat.
That's Puss in Boots from the film Shrek 2. But of course, this shoe-wearing cat has been around a lot longer than that film. He appeared in a French tale by this man we've been hearing about a bit, Perrault, in 1697. Rebecca Ann De Rosario, why was this cat wearing boots?
That is a very good question, because there were earlier versions of the tale in which the cat was actually female.
Right.
But she never got boots. The cat becomes famous really with the boots, and that's when we get Puss in Boots. And an interesting aspect of it is that when you look at illustration, the cat always has outlandishly beautiful boots. And yet the cat's actually asking them for them for a very practical purpose, so that he can go through the brambles, etc., to help out his owner. But they usually become these beautiful boots and they give him a bit of a swagger, so they become part of his personality. They turn the cat basically into this swaggering con artist, and it also puts him up on his two paws. He doesn't have four boots, he has two boots, so he actually stands up like a person.
So in this case, should we look at the shoes as some sort of symbol of progress or advancement?
I think it's certainly part of these narratives, particularly when you get to the boots in relation to men. They're often very practical and they allow men to move more practically through territory, through society itself. For women, the shoes tend to be more beautiful, but we shouldn't dismiss that either, because for women, that would also allow them to move through society and even increase their status by the state of their shoes.
I mean, it's all so fascinating. I wonder if, and I know your focus is on fairy tales, but if we look at stories today, can we still see the same power and meaning in a pair of shoes when we read a book?
I think we still can, even in popular culture. I mean, Sex and the City, for instance, was all about loving shoes. Mm. And so you can see a lot of the fairy tale narratives actually coming through that series. But yeah, I think shoes still have that power over us. There's still something that is incredibly beautiful, the workmanship that goes into many shoes. And there's still that great sense of you have the very beautiful, very rich shoes, and you also have the very practical shoes that everyone wears. So there's still a lot there for people to play with.
Oh, this has been so fascinating. Rebecca Ann de Rosario from Monash University, thanks for sharing your love of fairy tales and shoes with us.
Thank you for having me.
And Rebecca Ann's book is called Fashion in the Fairy Tale Tradition, What Cinderella Wore. It's published by Palgrave. She's also written a great article about shoes and fairy tales for The Conversation, and there's a link on our website.